Welcome, listeners, to Envision This. We connect you to visionaries of a more resilient, equitable, and earth-friendly future. And we hope that you will take part in today's conversation if you're listening live by calling in to 646-652-2235. That number again is 646-652-2235. All beings are organs within the body of the great family of life, writes Dieter Doom in his book, Terra Nova, Global Revolution and the Healing of Love. And this book is now becoming available in English. Our guests, Martin Wieniecki and Naila Mendelson and Dara Silverman, are here in the States from their home in Tamara in Portugal to do a book tour celebrating the publication of the English version of this great book. Terra Nova, the book, foresees a coming apocalypse brought on by the global idiocy and spread of fascism that is currently threatening to engulf our economy, our ecology, our politics, our culture, and in fact, our species. Our guests envision this, the beating heart of Terra Nova, of the new earth, is the sacred alliance of all living beings. So please help us to welcome Martin, Naila, and Dara.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us about the mission that brings you here to the States.
We are here for 10 days in New York, in the East Coast. We've also done an event already in Washington, D.C. at American University. And we simply feel that it's such a search for new ways of living, for an alternative to this current model that is running towards apocalypse, as you just said. And, living in and working in a project that has for nearly 40 years gathered so much perspective and knowledge for how a new society on totally new foundations could be built. We said we want to go out into the world and connect to people who are with this question and share about our work and present this book, which in a way captures the essence of this long research that this project has done. So we are doing a trip around the east and west coasts of the U.S. now during September and October, presenting this book, also speaking about our experience, also doing different workshops at the West Coast. And we also do a trip to connect to people who are forward thinkers on this question of what comes after the collapse of global capitalism.
Aha. Now, if listeners become interested in reading Dieter's book, how would they access it?
This is very easy. You go to a webpage called terranova.tamera, TAMERA.org. terranova.tamera.org, and you simply purchase it through our online shop. You can also go to your book dealer and ask him to order a copy. This is also a possibility. We just ask you not to go to Amazon, because it is this very big globalized supply system that is not so friendly for small publishing businesses. So this would be our request, just to use our own online shop. Or you can also go to our events if you happen to live in New York or in Los Angeles or in San Diego or Ojai or San Francisco. or in Ashland or Portland, just find on the same website our itinerary and meet us and get the book directly at our events.
Wonderful. Why is promoting this book so important to you and to us and potentially to our listeners?
I mean, I think that in a way it really captures the essence of the experience that that it is to engage in a new form of life that is a holistic model for a new society. Holistic in a sense of trying to create a new relation, not only in the ways we engage with our economy and our decision-making processes, but really on a very profound level in the way we engage in our human relationships, dissolving the fear that is underlying this insanity of our society, and also finding a new relation to nature, which we disregard so strongly in this current capitalist model. And I believe that every revolution somehow starts with a theory. Yeah, the big wave of the different revolutionary movements we had in the last 150 years, they were all based on a certain thought or on certain theoretic systems. And a theory might seem as something dry, but actually I believe that this is something very powerful. If this dream of a new society can actually start to open up in the hearts of people who care about the future, then this can become a vital motor to drive the transformation of our world into a better place. So this is my motivation. I mean, it is through the writings of this project that I engaged in this work, and so I believe that this is a powerful force. Somehow there is a slogan also for our campaign that says those who are against war need a vision for peace, and this is the reason at least why I I'm active on this bit.
Just as a technical matter, we're getting some noise from anyway, we're getting some noise. Do you have the direct link to us still up through Skype?
I believe so.
Please shut it down. I think that's what the source of the background noise that we're getting is.
Okay.
Sorry
for this.
Okay. Naila or Dara, do you have any? Dara, do you have anything to add to his answer about why this book is so very important?
Sure. How Martin spoke about this. This theoretical basis. I mean, it is a theory of global healing, and this takes so many different. There's so many different layers that this book touches on for me. Where it's quite actually a personal book, where one can really go into oneself, and look also at one's connection with other people, connection with the animal world, the plant world around them, connection to a divine source, and where this kind of inner work ripples out into the global level. And I mean, this is what we need to look at the moment. The Earth is on such a fine wire.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the work of Tamara has been going on for nearly 40 years now, and it's constantly been circling this question of of how human beings can live together in a way that is healing for the individual human being, for groups of people, and for the planet itself.
That's important work.
Yeah, and I want to reinforce it. It's been in existence for 40 years.
That's right. I mean, the project started in Germany in 1978 and has been, it started out as a small group of people that decided to really stay together and work, like to really, really go into these human topics. What does it mean to be a human being among human beings? And over the years, the project developed more and more into external work as well, creating a model for landscape healing, for new ways of technology, new ways of bringing children up. But it always held on to this deep inner work of the human being.
A lot of the readings that I've been doing of late gets into the unity of our inner worlds to what we, how we relate to the external. It sounds like you're coming on onto the same type of philosophy.
Right. I mean, I think this is a very important orientation in a way for peace work, that this understanding of how much it is necessary to establish peace within and among ourselves if we want to establish peace in the world. Because there have been so many attempts of kind of changing the political structure, the structure of economy and society. And while this is very important and indispensable to create new models for all these outer systems, the failure for them so often has been the inability to actually create a form of human coexistence that could produce trust between the people and solidarity and real mutual support on a structural and sustainable basis. And this, I believe, is a very profound challenge in the search for, you know, a sustainable future culture, that we understand that this term of sustainability is not only an ecological one, but it will require also, you know, a social revolution in the ways we interact with each other. And there we are just facing this necessity of really reviewing the ways we coexist, and this has been kind of the research of this project for 40 years, to really establish a social structure where human beings no longer need to disguise ourselves, no longer need to lie to each other, can be truthful, so that an ethical behavior is not just a moralistic add-on, but actually something that emerges from naturally from the way we coexist.
What does theater foresee as the apocalypse, and getting tongue-tied here, apocalypse and change of eras?
I mean, this is kind of, you know, citing the first part of the book. I mean, it is kind of a view into the world that kind of starts from the premise that the human world that we have created over the last millennia, you could say the world of the patriarchal era or the imperialistic and capitalist age, that this civilization is running towards disaster, is destroying our planet's ability to support our life, because it has been in fundamental contradiction with the laws of life. So he says kind of that that whenever there is when the sociosphere of our human world and the biosphere of the natural world, when they are in contradiction, then you have you have criminality, you have disease, violence, and war come into being, and that this is the apocalyptic limit that we are facing now, because the discrepancy between these two has just become too wide in order to, you know, continue living in a decent manner as humanity on this planet. And therefore, the change of eras that he defines, or that is very fundamental in our work at Tamara, is the understanding that the world that we as human beings create, and the world that has created us, the world of life, that these two worlds have to come together again, and that this, you know, the more we are able to do this, that this will offer a direction for this upcoming transformation and revolution. So this is kind of, this is the foundation for a new era, and in order to do this, we need places where this reunification of these two worlds can actually be researched, tested, demonstrated, and spread.
And if I can paraphrase what you're saying or summarize it, it's, I think what you're talking about is developing a partnership culture that's not only about partnership with people in different races and different nationalities and so on, but also with all of nature.
Mm. Right.
Absolutely.
How does the book Terra Nova propose to stop this global idiocy that currently engulfs us?
I mean, it starts kind of from the idea that that humanity is a holistic, and the Earth form a holistic system. This means that that whatever action I do, or that a specific group or a community does, that this is always in relation to all else. And so there is a real possibility for leveraging change in this model of seeing reality, because it no longer requires that we kind of, you know, go to all the worlds and reform the political situation in order to change the policy or something like this. But it is the view that actually a few highly developed, highly complex model centers around the world could leave a profound impact in terms of offering a perspective for a new culture. That this could, that these centers could kind of trigger a change. And so the book also connects with this idea that British biologist Rupert Sheldrake put forward of the morphogenetic field, that our common evolution is steered by the morphogenetic field, which is an invisible information field that kind of stores all the habits of our species. And for the last 6,000 years, we've been storing habits of war, of trauma, of fear, and this is what runs humanity at the moment. However, this is not the ultimate law of how life has to be forever, but it is the historical condition of the present morphogenetic field. And so if we are able to have a few places like cultural crystals where a profoundly new way of life is developed and lived, not only an idea, lived as a matter of fact, then this could create a new morphogenetic field which releases new impulses, new perspectives also, that thus would be naturally picked up by people all over the world. This is the idea of changing the world by way of what Doom calls the morphogenetic revolution.
What is it? The
morphogenetic.
Morphogenetic, okay. Yeah, as you were talking about that, I also thought about Carl Jung's collective unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Very much a similar idea, except for Jung kept it within the human, whereas the morphogenetic is more planetary.
Right.
Dara, how do we overcome the fascism that is currently threatening to engulf us?
Good question. I mean, this idea of fascism is such a fascinating topic to look at, because we so often delegate like this word into a political party, and thereby it's quite easy. Yeah, one can always say it's those people. It's Germany, World War II. It's something that happened in history.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. What happened?
Mickey Mouse of America.
But actually, there's it's actually a character structure.
Mm-hmm.
There's something within the human being that has this fascist element that comes out of I would say millennia of trauma, where one has lost connection with one's natural core. And I mean, this book and also Dieter Doom's work has very much circled around studying this kind of trauma, also diving into the work of Wilhelm Reich, who wrote such amazing things like The Mass Psychology of Fascism and The Murder of Christ, and also Alice Miller, who looks at the childhoods, actually, of these historical fascist figures, and looks at these points of trauma and that happened at a very early age most of the time. If one can connect to this point in oneself and begin to heal the trauma, this kind of fascist drive can also be reversed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Martin can add to this.
Maybe just to say that I think it's also really a matter of redesigning the ways people live. Because if you see, I mean, what Dara just referred to, the work of Alice Miller, who was so genius in kind of analyzing the childhood structures of so many perpetrators and dictators. And so you see that none of these people grew up in a social environment that would have allowed them to have the experience of trust. And if you see this, the answer is very clear. We have to create forms of life that guarantee children to grow up in trust and safety. Because as long as this is not given, we will always reproduce a structure that at some point, you know, a structure of pain and of anger and hatred that at some point threatens to burst out as this eruption of fascist violence. And the question is not whether this fascism is brown or red or, you know, or whether it's the Tea Party or whatever. It is a human unresolved structure, and it can only heal once the human heart can regain the trust that it lost at this very primal stage.
I think also it has really a lot to do with being able to speak truth again, to come back to one's real longings, one's real also one's forbiddenness longings, one's longing for purpose in life, and given a culture where this is continually suppressed and blocked, like blocked life energy, it just erupts into violence, into fascism.
Mm-hmm.
And this looks very different also. I mean, yeah, it can be self-violence, it can be depression, it can take the form of abusing a child and continually perpetuating the cycle. And so there, I think what Martin said is really vital, this thing of creating social structures where truth can be spoken and where trust can where trust is then an end result.
Dieter in the book suggests strongly that the current economic, ecological, political, and spiritual culture is also poisoning and sickening our bodies. Would one of you like to comment on how that works?
I mean, it's in a way very simple, I think, that, if you look at society at its current stage, you find a system that is on all the different levels fueled by fear and violence. You know, if I go to a supermarket, I find 10,000 products of in packaged fear and violence. I find if I plug in into the electrical grid, I get energy that is produced from sources that rape the earth. On so many levels, this is information and this is energy that damage the body and our physical system the whole time needs to kind of measure up against this program of disease, and wherever the organism is kind of caught in fear, the blockage of this life energy that Dara just spoke about actually takes place. It is the body armor that Wilhelm Reich brought up as a concept. So we are compressed. We are like the amoeba that was hit by a drop of acetone. We live in a contracted way. And in order to live healthily, we need an environment that allows us to reconnect with life energy, with the connection with the sacred matrix, with the energy of trust, basically.
In what way does the book, or does Dieter claim that our culture has actually destroyed love?
I think this connects again to this central question of creating truth and creating trust, and where in most love relationships, I mean, also erotic love relationships, but love between children and a parent, or between people and animals, love on all different levels. Truth and this free expression of life energy doesn't really have space any longer. Dieter Doom and also the work of Tamara has really gone into this this erotic love question, and there it's that one cannot follow life impulses, that one can't follow one's direct energy, that if I have an intimate love partner, the society around me doesn't allow that I can show interest in another. And there something becomes blocked. Where we've put love relationships into narrow boxes. I mean, we often have this correlation between love and water, because in Tamara we've also done a lot of work with water, and allowing this life energy to flow freely and in the natural way that it wants to move. And it's quite similar with love, where if we put it into these narrow boxes of monogamy or of traditional marriage, that it doesn't have the space to flow in the way that it would like to, or that it's that is natural, that is healthy. And there it breaks out. I mean, similar as a, as water does when it's restricted, when it's blocked behind concrete dams or in narrow channels, that it doesn't have the space to express itself, and it becomes distorted.
Maybe I can just add also, because I'm a man, and to say that, you know, a very strong point in the work of Tamara, and also, you know, what the book speaks about is actually this point of healing the wound of this male dominance in the patriarchal era that has left such a trauma in the area of sexuality and love, where in order to establish its power, the patriarchal rulers, above all, the two things. One was the destruction of the original tribal communities in which people lived, which took their natural anchor away. And the second thing, destroying the sexual and spiritual self-determination of women, you know, and doing this at a destroying the sexual right of self-determination of women in a level that is so horrible that we can hardly fathom it. I mean, starting from forced monogamy, you know, almost 3,000 years ago, all the way to the burning of the witches, and if you think in terms of what we know today about epigenetics, for example, where scientists can prove today that the experiences of trauma are stored in our genetic code, and when you then see that, you know, century after century, generation after generation, there is this war of a male society against a woman, then it is kind of clear that after hundreds and after thousands of years, you just have a trauma in love. You have a trauma where women no longer dare to kind of reveal themselves in their sexual being, and where you have all these psychological injuries, where the man is always behaving towards the son, towards the mother, as a consequence of the inhibition of the woman to express herself freely as a sexual being and as a spiritual being, and you know, where the daughter is fixated to this patriarchal father figure, and all of this, and this is the underground. This trauma is and its distortions. Those are the images that steer us in love, and so this is what we are dealing with when we fall in love, which starts out beautifully, and after often a very short time, we are confronted with these structures. And society is cruel in this because it offers no social structure for two lovers to deal with this at all. You know, people live in apartments for the two of them, and actually we need a whole new social structure that embeds lovers in a much bigger community where there is people around to support, wise women to offer knowledge, and all of this, in order to really dissolve this problem. So this question of love is very deep because it is kind of the epicenter of our longing and our fear. And in the end, it is also, you know, the love relationships. This is where children are coming from. And if there is no love between parents, how should children, you know, grow up in trust into this world? So this is an ongoing, you know, social catastrophe that perpetuates itself, and we urgently need new models to heal this wound. I think this is the deepest question of our times. How do we heal love?
How Does Tamara suggest we repay the debt of gratitude to all women now and throughout history that we owe?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think in a way to create a new social structure where the structures of patriarchy are overcome and healed, mm-hmm. You know?
I mean, a lot of the work in Tamara is allowing, creating spaces where the woman can find back to her nature. And this is, I mean, how Martin now spoke of these years and years of patriarchy, hundreds of years of patriarchy, the intellectual voice of the woman, the sexual nature of woman, the how woman wants to be in connection with other women, this has gotten so distorted. And so to create spaces where women can let go of these masks, to continually remove these masks that have piled on top, and where men also take a commitment to support women in this search. And I mean, our work in Tamara, it's not about returning to matriarchal times, for example, not at all. But after a time of matriarchy and then a long period of patriarchy, we're working on creating a culture of partnership. Brawl touched on it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Where the two genders can really support one another in their strengths and in their in coming into who they are as archetypes.
And I think you're also speaking to a societal structure where it's more bottom up and top down. And there, I'm not saying that it's an either or, because like if you have a kid that's ready to throw his hand into a fire, you want to be top down and get him out of there.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you know, there needs to be more of a bottom up orientation in terms of governance.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, you know, top down with the chief in charge or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this kind of top down approach very seldom works, actually.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah, we have a lot of proof of that.
The book introduces the concept of the universal human being. Can you kind of explain how the universal human being is visualized?
I mean, it starts from this idea that, you read this beautiful quote in the beginning, yeah, of all beings being organs in the great family of life, or in the universe. I don't remember the exact wording. And so is the human being. And if you go into this view of the holistic or even the holographic nature of reality, then you see that we are not just the product of some evolution, some separated being that has come forth in some planet, in some remote corner of the universe, but that actually, as conscious beings, as beings that have this reflected consciousness, we are a very specific, very particular organ of the spirit that forms this world. And this is kind of the idea of a universal human being. It's not a certain figure, a certain specific archetype of how the human being ought to be, but it's rather the recognition of what kind of role we play in this connectedness with the universe, and how we you know, how our sense of humanity broadens and our possibility and our consciousness and our perception, and also our capability to love once our channels are no longer blocks to our environment, and that we will see ourselves as no longer as separated from the rest of the world, but we will engage as a steward for life, a servant for this earth, because we see our very fundamental interdependence with all beings once we no longer live in this separated cocoon of our fear-based world.
Mm-hmm. What are the greenhouses of trust or healing biotopes that you've set up?
We call Tamara Healing Biotope 1. And it's this idea of spaces that look into all aspects of life on this planet, and search for the healed version of it. So in raising children, in interactions with animals, in how we grow our food, in how we relate to water, new technologies, new social interactions. Where all aspects of life are geared towards healing again. And this is the idea of healing biotopes, and very much what is put into practice in Tamara, researched and practiced. And I mean, greenhouses of trust, this is another name that we give to this. It's very much looking at the social interactions, but it encompasses more. Also how animals can approach us again with trust when we no longer create reasons for them to fear us. And the idea of healing biotopes or greenhouses of trust is something like acupuncture points for this planet, where Martin mentioned it earlier, like this morphogenetic field idea, where several different points on the planet could create enough of a wave that a new field for healing could arise.
What role did Dieter Doom himself have in setting up Tamara and these other healing biotopes?
He was the one who kind of developed this idea of starting out as an author and a sociologist and psychoanalyst, and also as one of the leaders in the left movement in Germany in the 60s, very active in the fight against the Vietnam War, and trying to lead this anti-imperialistic struggle to success, and at some point realizing that the revolution cannot be accomplished without the emancipation of the people involved in this struggle. And so he kind of he was very strong in bringing this vision, and in the first years also being really somebody who had to kind of guide the community to be able to actually be a communitarian vessel of knowledge and intelligence. And he still is an important visionary and somebody, especially with a profound knowledge in the realms of art, of healing, also in the whole erotic issue. But in the last years, he has kind of stepped back in terms of the leadership for the project and handing this over to a circle of next generation leaders who are, you know, looking on the way the project develops, and he taking on his role in writing, being, you know, working on the vision also on a planetary level, and going really deep into the question of how do we dissolve and heal this collective trauma. And I must also say, we are speaking now a lot of Dieter Doom as the initiator, but also, you know, every strong man kind of has a strong woman on his side.
Yes.
And this is somehow also important that he has been in partnership and close collaboration for more than 30 years with Sabine Lichtenfels, who is the co-founder of Tamara and a woman who has gone deeply into, you know, developing feminine peace knowledge, going deep into the research of what were the matriarchal cultures for the patriarchal era that could offer us some orientation for building peace in the future. And so it's kind of also really this, the balance of this very strong masculine and this very strong feminine vision that I would consider the heart of this visionary driving motor of this project.
What I'm hearing you say is you're fostering a partnership culture.
Absolutely, yeah.
Could you tell us about the communities you're setting up where deceit and betrayal no longer have an evolutionary advantage?
Yeah. I mean, there's maybe the easiest way to try to explain this is to tell you a bit about our main social tool that we use. We call it the Forum. And we practice this every day as a group. And it ultimately looks like this, where a group of people come together, usually around 30 people or so. One person is leading with a person on their side. And one person sitting in this circle steps into the middle and performs an issue that is burning on their heart. It can be anything of an anger attack or something around jealousy or something that's just simply too beautiful to say in a normal way. And where one has the opportunity to express this, also quite exaggerated, to bring it out of normality. And we say that this is something of a world stage where one can perform the issues of humanity, because actually, if one observes this without judgment or condemnation, one realizes that nearly every issue that comes into the forum is present with all people bearing witness. And so after one performs their issue, they sit down and others can give feedback. And one makes a commitment that one gives feedback only to support the other, to grow into their higher self, to bring things into awareness that are usually hidden by blind spots. And this kind of radical truth that is held and embedded within a community structure creates spaces where one no longer needs to lie or to deceive others or to hurt somebody else intentionally. And so it becomes something of a social structure where truth is practiced in a radical way every day.
Can one of you give us an example or a story about how this looks in action?
I mean, there are many examples one can give. I mean, I also want to add that for us it's kind of important to, you know, that all the important issues that are present in the community, that they become transparent. And I mean, I spoke about, you know, the the difficult situation for love couples, for example, that they find themselves in when they live in a, you know, New York apartment, needing to deal with their conflict on their own. And this is something that, in my own experience, is something very beautiful to experience how much there is another basis for love to grow when I am able to bring the issues in this specific realm, for example, to be able to open this up with other people in an atmosphere of trust. And that from the knowledge that, you know, when I express something, maybe also intimate, that moves me on a deeper level than something I would share just in a normal, casual conversation, then this, it connects me with my community on a much more deep level than when we just speak about, you know, the organization of the community or work matters or something like this. And so this is, from there, a basis of trust, and also the possibility to support one another develops, which is quite profound. And especially so in the love area, that in the moment I can embed my issues in a larger community, a certain tension that is there between my love partner, or it can also be in a conflict that I have with somebody else, with the one that I'm involved in a conflict with. In the moment I can open this up to a bigger group of people, the issue might not be solved right away, but it moves away from this start confrontation with one another, and it also connects me with the knowledge that the issues we are dealing with are actually not that personal. There are always expressions of issues that are present in the whole world, and what we tend to do is to identify them very specifically with specific people. And so this kind of way of transparency and consciousness work in the community, it helps me to lose identification and to gain knowledge with these conflicts, so that one becomes more able to deal with them. It's not about conflict resolution, but it's actually about being able to deal with conflict in a creative and responsible way, in a way that we no longer give guilt to others and attack others, but actually that we learn to say what we have to speak to others, and to take responsibility for the things we ourselves do.
What does the Tamara experience lead you to foresee evolving after the collapse of globalization?
That's a great question. I mean, one thing that I think is very clear is that the whole environmental crisis, that this, you know, insatiable desire of global capitalism for more and more growth has brought about, the only way we can deal with this crisis is to return to much more decentralized, small-scale supply systems and forms of economy and life where we stop to abuse and exploit nature in the way we have done it. So where we systems that are decentralized, regionally self-sufficient, and regenerative in the way that they are in cooperation with nature. So this is a scenario that one can really envision, and this is not only something that I think is, you know, is developed in Tamara, but more broadly, that this is a tendency in the social movements that we have. Also, when you look, for example, at the economic meltdown that happened in Greece, where this is just an impulse of people to go down to organize themselves on a local and regional level to grow food again in their gardens. So this is an impulse where the major centralist globalized systems where they actually can be replaced by alternatives that will work much better, because the experience we have had in Tamara was very powerful in seeing that in the moment we establish forms of self-sufficiency, ecological and technological structures that connect us with the cycles of nature and with the inexhaustible energy sources of the sun, for example, that we actually tap into abundance. And you know, the experience of the water retention landscape was very powerful in this, of seeing that we had been in a place that was literally drying out, running into desertification, and in the moment we started to implement this in its core, very simple technology of capturing the rainwater in special lakes that would allow the water to fill it back into the earth, to refill the aquifers. From this point, nature started almost to resurrect, started to restore its biodiversity, trees growing at such a speed, how many animal species would return to this land. So it's really, you see that there is something, Dieter Duhm calls it, there is an original matrix in life, in nature, that starts to awaken in the very moment we put structures into it, conditions that are suitable to awaken it. And so this is an experience, I think, that will be had all over the world once we stop raping our planet in such a terrible way.
What can you explain a little more deeply, what is the sacred matrix that will support our revolution, our evolution?
Yeah, I mean, this is a word, it's a term that Dieter Duhm coined for the universal pattern of life. It's a pattern of relation and a pattern of motion, in a way, that you can find on all dimensions and levels of the universe, from the very small scale, the very micro scale of the subatomic level, all the way to the dance of the galaxies, and where in all the, you know, holons, so all the levels of the universe, you find, in a way, self-organizing systems. You do not only find piles of different separate things, but you find holistic systems that behave like organisms, organizing themselves with a great power of resilience. Systems that create balance between its individual organs or beings that inhabit it. And so there is this inherent structure of this organizing matrix built into all its beings as well. And we as human beings, we are supplied with this gift of a reflective consciousness where we can actually understand this dream. And we are, even though we have been separated from this sacred matrix for some thousands of years, it still comes up in us as a dream of another world that can almost never completely die. Yeah, this is the dream of a world that is in harmony with this original structure of life, where we live in connection with our brothers and sisters in humanity and all beings of nature. So this is the sacred matrix is also a driving power within ourselves that wants to lead to the manifestation of a different world.
Am I hearing you correctly that when the when we align ourselves with, when we open ourselves to, when our thinking and our actions become in alignment with the sacred matrix, that creates a quantum leap in the evolution for humanity and for the new earth?
Absolutely. That's right. I mean, it's kind of, the sacred matrix is also an informational pattern. And in the moment we consciously recognize it, we stop following the steering patterns that have that we have developed from this history of fear and separation, and that now lead us to perpetuate our separation. So there is this pattern of the sacred matrix, and in the moment we consciously awaken to it, we will act in another way. We will act with compassion. We will act truthfully with one another. We will establish whole new ways of life systems on this planet. So this is actually a cooperation partner for the transformation that is inside ourselves as this pattern of the sacred matrix. And yes, in the moment we align ourselves with this pattern, a new chapter opens for the possibility of healing, both individually and on a collective level.
How will water, food, and energy become freely available to humanity?
This goes along the line that Martin was now speaking about with the sacred matrix, about realigning our systems, the world that we create and the world that has created us, bringing these into alignment again, and looking at the principles of nature and basing the ways that we create as humanity on these principles. And so, there's incredible water research that's happened over the past century. There is remarkable ways of growing food that create abundance for humanity and for the beings of nature, for the earth itself. There's technology that doesn't exploit the earth and that provides enough energy that we need, that all of our needs can be taken care of. Like this information, these technologies, they exist. Yeah, they exist open source also. And it's about reconnecting them and choosing new ways of life where the human being can act in cooperation with the way that nature wants to behave.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is also the sentence, of course, water, food, and energy being freely available for all of humanity. This is kind of the death sentence for global capitalism. And so I think one very important bit in our work is also that the ecological and technological innovation that allows the creation of this abundance, that this is always coupled with a new social structure where people can hold this autonomy, because if you don't have a political and economic framework that allows the free distribution of these elementary goods, even the best technologies might end up serving a system that creates extreme social inequality. And therefore, it is so important that a social vessel is created that fosters solidarity between people on a very profound level, and that no longer creates this desire for private property, for private possession versus the communitarian one. And this is above all a question of whether we manage to establish a form of human coexistence where an individual will love again to be part of a community and will no longer need to compensate some of the life that he has missed out on accumulating private wealth.
Why do you engage to say human beings are the eyes of evolution?
I mean this is kind of a statement, I think, from Julian Huxley originally. I mean, this is a statement that kind of reflects on this idea that that I was speaking about earlier, about how the human being is a specific organ in the great family of life, the one that has this reflective consciousness, and the being that is able to reflect on himself and on creation, on nature, on the world, and thereby being also able to correct things and to become co-creators in the work of creation. So I think this is how I understand this sentence. And of course it is a very profound one, because if we fully awaken to it, we also awaken to our responsibility to use this capacity in a way that serves the sustainability of our earth.
That gives me a wonderful segue into the next and perhaps central question. What can we and our inspired listeners do to encourage folks to understand that all beings, including themselves personally, are organs within the body of the great family of life?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think in a way that this awakening happens increasingly in this world, sometimes also through events that in the beginning may seem like a stroke of fate. I mean, how many people are there who kind of awakened to the reality of our interconnectedness with all of life, for example, through near-death experiences, or you know, people in Japan who were hit by the tsunami and the earthquake that happened 4 years ago, and then for the first time in their lives realized that there is a starry sky above them and a sacred world, in fact, that they live in. So it's often in this time of crisis, it's often that we remember our you know, the connection with our fellow beings through experiencing the catastrophe that we co-created, also that our actions brought about. And so I think this is happening. I mean, it's also happening through positive experience, through the experience of, and, you know, when love opens to an animal or to another human being, or the experience of community, it's very powerful to awaken the sense of compassion for one another, which compassion is it's the reflection of this interdependence with all else. And I think in order to really foster it, we need to create spaces which allow this experience to be had much more often and much more sustainable also. And so these are all, and I think these are spaces that connect us with the realization of our true nature, with the realization of the situation of this world, and that allow people to just see themselves and see each other on a much more profound level, meaning ways of meeting that build community.
Hey, Ela or Dara, go ahead, because I was just going to invite you to expand on that.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I agree with Martin very much. And still, I think that one doesn't need to wait also for an experience to happen, but that one can choose, like almost like putting on different glasses, to walk through the world in this very usual separated self state. Or if one chooses, one can just be in oneself with a different state of mind, knowing that what I do right now affects this person that I interact with, affects this person on the other side of the ocean, affects what choices I make with what I buy or how I choose to live affects the world around me. And this, I mean, to know that one is not separated, is an interconnected part of the whole. With this consciousness, walking around with these lenses on, these experiences can come very easily, I find.
That's beautifully stated.
One of the things that I feel moved to do right now is to suggest that people, as soon as it becomes available, access the book, Terra Nova, Global Revolution and Healing of Love, and read it and immerse themselves in it so that those of us that are not living in one of the healing biotopes can work with the people that are towards creating this new earth.
Before I forget, I'm just curious, do you have any videos on your website of tomorrow? Because when I do an article for op-ed, it would be kind of nice to throw a video in there.
Sure, there are different short documentary video clips that can also be accessed from our webpage, tamara.org. Yeah, and there's an own YouTube channel called Grace Media that you might be able to look into, and also people that are listening now.
Would you repeat how listeners can access the books?
Sure.
So the best way to support us and this tour and to get your hands on this new book is to purchase it through our website. It's terranova.tamara.org. terranova.tamara.org. And I want to say thank you also to you very, very much for all of your support over the years with our project and our work. And also to say that it's a revolution that can't be done alone.
Mm-hmm.
People all over the world in their individual roles. And I want to say thank you also to your work, Mary and Burl, for promoting new consciousness.
Thank you.
And is there a message that we haven't touched on that you'd like to leave with our listeners before we sign off?
I think we are fine. It was quite comprehensive.
Good. Well, that feels good to know that we have, at least in our reading of the book, been able to touch on the highlights and what can be done, because it's crucial that we start doing something for sure before we collapse.
And I was just going to say, I tell you, if we were younger, we'd be over there with you guys. I mean, I think what you're doing is great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for your work.
Thank you.
And blessings to our readers, okay, our listeners, who are concerned about this and are in their own way living out and creating the necessary evolution. Blessings to you and gratitude and to all of humanity that is involved, engaged currently in this great, I don't want to say experiment, but transition.
Right. Evolution.
Blessings.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
Have a good day.
You too.